Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly after you play your first $5 lineup.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What is up, everybody? Happy Thursday. Welcome into another new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. In just a moment, we're going to be joined by Mike Wall. A beautiful Mike Wall Thursday. Great discussion today. Really think you're going to enjoy it. We go over a little bit of everything, obviously talking about Packers Seahawks. We look forward to Packers Saints. We go over the defensive back. We go over everything. Adrian Cooper and the way he's playing. Josh Myers. So definitely stick around for this one. It's going to be a hopefully informative and fun episode. Always great catching up with Mike. Before we get there, a couple things I wanted to go over really quick. First of all, as I've been talking about, Milwaukee Admirals game this coming Saturday. I'm going to be doing a live Q&A prior to the game. It's going to be a ton of fun. There's going to be some legendary Packers there, including George Kuntz and Robert Brooks and Ed West. It's going to be a ton of fun. Plus, you get access to the game, the Q&A. I'm going to do a human hockey puck. You're not going to want to miss that. So you can get in for under $20. Get your tickets now. I will link to the tickets in today's episode, so make sure to check that out. Also want to shout out our brand new Pack-A-Day Podcast YouTube members, Camilo Jimenez and Ryan Kitzhaber. Thank you guys so much for signing up. Appreciate you guys a ton. If you have not yet checked out memberships, make sure to do so. Today, episode with Aaron Nagler and I, we go over, of course, Packers Saints coming up this week, previewing the game. And then also you get extra Ross Uglum content. So there's a bunch of stuff out there. Make sure to check that out. And of course, a members only Q&A every week as well. Speaking of live Q&As, we've got Pack-A-Day Live coming up tonight, 7 p.m. Central Time, so make sure to check that out. The one big piece of news and notes and noteworthy takeaway from Wednesday, unfortunately, it's bad news. We did find out, per the Matt Schneidman show where he interviewed Matt LaFleur, that Jordan Morgan is unfortunately going to be out for the year. So there is no return in place for Jordan Morgan this season. We'll have to wait for that till 2025. This does not have any sort of commentary on Jordan Morgan. He's still a very talented player. We don't need to jump to any conclusions on whether or not, you know, we can wait, right? This is a 4-year plus one contract. If they want to give him that fifth year option down the road, his future as a Packer is well in front of him. He already got opportunities to start this year and rotate in. He's going to be a good player. He's going to be a valuable offensive lineman. And if I were a betting man today, I would say that he's a likely starter in game one going into next year. So let's give this a little bit of time before we jump to, oh, he's a bust or they shouldn't have taken him or anything like that. A long way to go, and you can never have enough good offensive linemen. I'm very, very hopeful that that Jordan Morgan pick is still going to pay pretty big dividends down the line. Now, let's get to our chat with Mike Wall. All right, friends, we are joined by the great Mike Wall. You can find him on Twitter at MikeWall68. Of course, you can find his great YouTube channel on Process to Perform. Block Party, I always want to say, I'll still say on my block, but the Block Party show is epic every single week. Mike, great to have you back on. How are you doing, my friend?
And doing great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's always great to be chatting with you. Fun one this week. Packers pick up a win against the Seahawks. Want your thoughts on that? Where Green Bay's headed from here? We'll talk about all of it. We'll break it all down. But I want to start. I'll give you the floor. Packers, Seahawks, what were kind of your key takeaways from that particular game?
Well, you know, the Packers come in as favorites. So the expectation is they're going to win. Really, the toss-up for you is Lumenfield going to be enough of a home field advantage to make this game close? Because I just think on paper the Packers are a superior team. You know, defensively, Green Bay is just – it was so fun to watch. Their defense is so fun to watch just in general. We talk about it every week. But this week, yep, you kind of looked at the matchup and the defensive line. DJ Slayton dominated this game in the run game. And, you know, schematically, even when they didn't have the right play dialed up, in other words, even when Seattle maybe had the right call from a leverage and number standpoint, the guy who needed to win the 1v1 to blow the play up did the job. And it was really nice to see the defensive line really dominate the interior offensive line of the Seattle Seahawks. And then obviously, you know, once even before Geno got hurt, they were giving out sacks like, you know, like candy canes. But I mean, once Geno got hurt, you can just see this like shift in confidence between the Green Bay Packers defensive line going, oh, there's blood in the water, it's hunting season. And, you know, the Seattle offense in general just going like, I can't remember what they said on the live broadcast, whether he had given up, you know, been sacked 61 times or something the 2 years prior, but you're just going,
Yeah.
You know, you start watching the game and, you know, I'm a Seattle fan. I'm a Green Bay Packers fan. But as I put my Seattle hat on, I go, like, holy shit. You know, you could tell how you could tell why he had been sacked 61 times or whatever the number was. But it was nice to see the defensive line winning 1v1s, winning with stunts, winning with the pressures. Like, everything was working.
Yeah.
And, you know, I said it on my show, you actually saw some new moves. We talked about it on your show. Maybe they listened last week. We actually saw some spin moves. We saw Lucas Van Ness try to spin move. It didn't work, but, you know, he tried it. Devontae Wyatt had a great spin for a sack. So you see guys doing some new stuff, expanding their games. And that part of it, I think, on the defensive side, was really great to watch. And then you talk about Andy, like, it's this team is so odd to watch because, you know, I remember I turned on the game. I think I missed the first two series because I was on a plane flight.
Sure.
And the game's already like 14-0 or something. And everyone's going, oh, Josh Jacobs just handled it. And, you know, he ends up finishing the game with less than 100 yards. He averages like 3.6 yards a carry. The whole team only averages 4 yards a carry. So it's not this dominant run game. But the one thing that stood out, and I haven't been able to verbalize this the right way for the entire season, and hopefully this hits right. What Josh Jacobs does that we can't quantify is he allows this team to start fast every week. Just by default, they can always start on the front foot, no matter because of the way he runs, because of the way he receives the ball out of the backfield and makes the first guy miss and runs through the second tackle and runs through the third tackle until the fourth guy finally gets him down. Because of the way we don't even have to block linebackers at times, even if the scheme's not right, because he can make that guy miss. He allows this team to always start fast. Like the offense is coming in with the horns down, you know, like the everybody is starting fast. The offensive line has confidence. The receivers are always blocking hard. Jordan Love doesn't have to throw the ball 42 times this game. You know, all those things are possible, I think, because of what Josh Jacobs, this kind of like non-quantifiable aura that Josh Jacobs brings to this offense that you don't even have to see during the course of the entire game. But that first quarter, it just seems like, you know, for the last couple of weeks, it's, his numbers in the first quarter are reflective of a guy who's going to rush for like 3,000 yards on the season. It never ends up that way during the course of the game, but it puts them in a position where it's like, okay, now everything works. Jordan Love doesn't have to throw the ball 40 times. Like the last 3 weeks of his stat line, a lot of people are going to talk about him and how well he's playing, but that's really just a consequence of they're in this really fantastic position after the first or second quarter every single week. And a lot of that is in large part due to the play calling, the execution, but Josh Jacobs and the confidence that he instills, I think, in the other 10 members of the offensive team.
It's amazing how much that fast start matters because it's such a great juxtaposition in this game. Charbonnet, I think, averaged over 5 yards per carry. Seattle ran the ball well when they got the opportunities, but they're down 14-0 right away. They go away from the run game and they can't continue to do it. Green Bay has the luxury going up 14-0 and, you know, playing the majority of the game up 3 scores that they can continue to run the ball. It is interesting, obviously, that the last handful of weeks, I would say that run game has sort of waned as the game has gone along. Is that to you defense is adjusting and stacking the box more? Is that the offensive line is just not consistent enough yet? Is that Josh Jacobs wearing down throughout the course of the game? Where do you kind of put that as, you know, the Packers maybe can't sustain maybe some of that success that they're having early in the game in the with the run offense?
Well, let's just look at I think it was the second play in the game where they've got a spread, two wide receivers on the left, one receiver split on the right, tight end in the backfield, offset, pistol formation, and they throw the swing pass it really is just a run. It's a toss sweep to the left. And they pull Josh Myers. Josh Myers had a great game, by the way, probably the best game I've seen him play. And just because he did so well in space and the double teams are fantastic. He still made mistakes, but you know, one of the best games I've seen him play. But Josh Jacobs catches the ball on technically just a toss and ends up running for 12, 13 yards. And I think what happens is Matt LaFleur's got all these things in his bag that you haven't seen yet. Whether it's schematically, they've got him spread out too much, whether he's running plays like that, and then they end up running the end around, I think, in the third or fourth quarter off the same look. You know, he's got all these things you just haven't seen. So, you know, when you get down to bread and butter stuff, a lot of defenses can scheme against that. The other team has good players as well. It's hard. And I thought that the Green Bay Packers, The Green Bay Packers had more clinic double teams in this game than I think they've had in a long time. But, you know, that being said, there's going to be just a handful of plays where a good defensive line and good depth from the Seattle box seven players are going to be able to stop a lot of the stuff that they've already seen. But you're talking about in the first quarter, there's so much stuff they haven't seen yet by formation, by personnel, that I think that just, you know, you can only bring in so many new plays in 1 week, and you can only dress it up so many different ways. And I think the struggle is for the Packers is like, do I have four quarters worth of new plays that we can introduce, or do I have to go back and grind out some of these, you know, split flow belly stuff? And when they do that, like, you know, how successful are we going to be? Because it's not always going to be a light box. It's not always going to be guys, you know, having to, you know, window dress the RPO look on with, you know, Jordan Love on the backside. I mean, some of the stuff they do, and we can get into like the X's and O's of it, because some of the stuff they do is really, really smart. And it just puts one position in particular in a real bind. But most defenses have prepped for a lot of this stuff. And it's the stuff I think that they haven't been able to prep for that week that they get them early with.
Yeah, no, that makes a ton of sense. Yeah, I think overall it's been such a huge value add. And again, just like you said, that confidence going into a game, having Josh Jacobs, and just I thought the first drive in this one was just beautiful. Just basically saying, we're going to give the ball to Josh Jacobs. You're not going to be able to stop him. We're going to score. We're going to be up 7-0 right away. It was just a really fun way to kind of, you know, set the tone in that game and really have no resistance getting into the end zone. That was a ton of fun. Just going back really quick to what you said about the defense, I'm so glad you brought up TJ Slayton. It was somebody that Matt LaFleur brought. I think it was LaFleur brought up as well, saying that he's playing some of his best football and what he's doing. Do you know how many snaps he played in this game?
He probably didn't play that many. You know, it just kind of, I don't know, but he just stands out. You know, sometimes when you're watching tape, like guys just kind of pop off the screen. Like, man, he just every time, like, is that 93 again? Like, holy hell, how many was it?
It was 13, like only 13 snaps in this game, but like super impactful 13 snaps. And I'm so glad you brought him up, because he's one of those players, especially in this game, that you could probably go the entire week having, you know, 10 conversations about the game and he might not get brought up. But what he did, especially in the run game, he brought the old gravedigger shovel out on one play wearing the number 93. Yeah, like he was just getting off of double teams, getting off of blocks and stopping the run really, really well. I've been really impressed with him as of late. They're going to have an interesting offseason decision if they want to bring him back. He'll be an unrestricted free agent in the offseason, but overall, very happy with him. Obviously, from a defensive side of things as well, one of the key players that did get a lot of talk this week, unlike maybe TJ Slayton, was Edgerrin Cooper. What were your impressions of Edgerrin Cooper and what he brings to this defense and how they maybe look a little bit different with him out there?
He's a good old-fashioned football player, and he just happens to be a really good athlete. You know, obviously, he gets – all these guys are going to get more notoriety when you get the sacks and you run in the pick stunts. And so a lot of that is a function of the defensive coordinator made a good football call. And I, like when he got the sack and he picked Tomlinson, I'm watching that because I'm an offensive lineman. I'm watching that play and I'm going, Lakin, like, do you not know that they're going to go double A gaps like the Bears did for the last 20 years and pick right. you like they've been doing? Like, did you not? Why did you set flat? That's stupid. But what the Packers do to flip that, the Packers do is like they on the defense, they're not missing the gimmies. They used to miss those gimmies, man. They don't miss gimmies anymore. And guys like Edgerrin Cooper, just when you're, why do they not miss gimmies, Mike? Well, because they brought in guys who don't miss gimmies. Evan Williams doesn't miss gimmies. Xavier doesn't miss gimmies. This Cooper does not. If you're going to give him a gift wrap present, he's going to open it. And their players in the National Football League, as talented as they are, they miss gimmies. And I think what you have now is you have a bunch of dudes that are really young, but, you know, it's I always go back to Minkah Fitzpatrick in Miami. I was just like – I was always kind of like, wow, he's different than everybody else on this team. Like, he doesn't make, like, rookie mistakes. He doesn't miss gimmies. And Edgerrin Cooper, he reminds me of that kind of just personality, on-field presence, confidence, all of that. Like, he doesn't – he takes what you're going to give him. If you're going to make a mistake, he's going to take advantage of it. I really like the way that this linebacker group has developed over the course of the year. I think you can make a lot of comments about. Listen, I'm not as big into the passing game, obviously, as other commentators are. And you do understand there are some issues there in the passing game. But me, this season, we wanted this team to be able to stop the run and consistently stop the run, get tackles for loss at a higher clip than they have the last 3-4 years. And I think they've done a really good – it feels like they've done a good job of that. You know, I know there's garbage time numbers and this and that. Like Charbonnet's, you know, touchdown. It's like, okay, you know, it's like you put it on the highlight tape because it's got to be there, but who cares? Yep. But when it matters, I think they've made a lot more plays this year. They're much more downhill aggressive. We talked about it on this podcast a lot. I think the issue you have there is I still think I think Quay Walker's an improving player, but you're going to have a numbers issue at that position, and you know they're going to have to figure out where everybody fits, because it's clear that Cooper's is the star in the making in that room. I think every time Eric Wilson gets on the field, he plays really well. So it's really hard to kind of start looking and going, well, you know, who's going to be there? How's that going to look in the next 2-3 years? But that's a fun room for sure. And Cooper is and just like a lot of these other young guys, like just guys that they if you're going to give them a present, they're going to take it. And I love that mentality and that way that Goody has been able to identify some of those people in the draft.
Do you know what makes the holiday season even better? You guessed it, winning. And right now on Prize Picks, you can win up to 1,000 times your money. And Prize Picks is the absolute best place to get real money action while watching your favorite sports. Prize Picks also offers a variety of weekly promotions that can lead to big payouts. And it will come as no surprise to you at all to find out that my favorite weekly promotion is Taco Tuesday, when Prize Picks discounts select player projections up to 25% to provide even more value for your lineups. Make your Prize Picks in less than 60 seconds and turn your sports opinions into real money all season long on Prize Picks. This week, I'm going with Blake Groupe, New Orleans kicker, because I think they're going to have to settle for a lot of field goal attempts against Green Bay's defense, and Josh Jacobs to run wild. The best part is that you can download the app today and use code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly after you play your first $5 lineup. That's $50 instantly after you play your first $5 lineup by using code PACKADAY. Prize Picks, run your game. It's that special holiday time of year that we all love, but you know what can make it even better? Going to live games during the holidays. If you haven't been to Green Bay for a December game, you have no idea what you've been missing. Some of my all-time favorite football memories have happened in the snow in Green Bay. As we speak, I'm going through the Game Time app and looking at tickets to Monday Night Football for the family. Not only are there multiple options to choose from, but you can see the exact view and there are multiple super deals to choose from. The best part, their lowest price guarantee, which ensures you get the best price for your seats. All right, I might take that back, actually. There's an even better feature, all-in pricing. You can toggle this feature on so that you're getting the entire cost of the event up front with no surprise fees at checkout, because guess what? We all hate surprise fees. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets this holiday season with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use code PACKADAY for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code PACKADAY for $20 off. Download Game Time today. What time is it? Game Time.
The influx of talent of Xavier McKinney, Edgerrin Cooper, Evan Williams, Javon Bullard in one offseason has been super instrumental. Obviously, getting Jeff Hafley as your defensive coordinator has helped a ton as well. But all four of those guys, I love watching play, just the way that they play football. You mentioned the big plays and the sacks and the interceptions, and that's going to get you a lot of notoriety. My favorite Cooper play in this one wasn't a sack, wasn't an interception. It was that Jackson Smith and Jigba little screen over the middle of the field where he just kind of, he reads it and shoots up and just goes and attacks him right away. That to me, just again, love the play from him. The fact that he was able to diagnose it so quick and then just again, get from point A to point B. Like you said, not only does he have the instincts and he's just an old school football player, but then he adds in the ridiculous athleticism as well. That to me was just like a play. I'm like, oh my goodness. Like you see the big plays and then you go back and watch the film and you see that, you see a couple really nice, it was definitely in garbage time in that last drive, but he's got, I think the last two tackles of the game are Edgerrin Cooper as well. Like he's got two tackles on teams, two and a half. Like he had the one that held up on the big hit for Eric Wilson as well. I think Matt LaFleur said they credit him with three special teams tackles. So I guess he got credit for that one too, but just all over the place. He's just a really, really fun player.
Yep. Watching tape matters. You can tell some of these guys come into the National Football League. I'll never forget different kind of side story, but Lofi Tatupu came into National Football League. He was getting coached by Kent Norton Jr. at USC. And so I remember like Lofa is out there calling Lofa's a rookie. He's calling our plays out. You know, Jim Mora Jr. is his coach. coach, his defense coordinator at Seattle. And, you know, I obviously went and played there a couple of years later, and I'm like, how the hell are you calling our plays out? You're a rookie, you know, rookie year. And he's like, I had Ken Norton Jr. teaching me in college. Like, all that matters. So you get these, like, why do you get guys from big programs early on? Well, because it's more likely than not that the guys that are coaching them have probably been in the show and know how to watch film and know how to prepare and know how to do all this stuff. And so you get these guys that are super athletes, and a lot of them are coming tailor-made to play in NFL systems and watch film and be manager. You know, they've been pros since they were 17, 18 years old. And I think you're seeing the result of some of these guys going to big programs that have just high level coaching at an early age and have carried on all those routines and habits that make you a good pro. And have that kind of mindset coming in, and then matching that with the athletic skill set that they have. It's something special. And I think I'm sure Goody is, that's some sort of consideration, you know, as opposed to like myself coming to the Naval Academy. Like, you can say you have a lot of maybe discipline, routine, just don't know how to play football. You know what I mean? Like, there's going to be a really, really steep learning curve for a guy like me. But for these guys, like, the learning curve's it's been apparent. It's Evan Williams. The learning curve's not that steep. And it's just amazing that you can come in. And the level of the NFL from all schematic and, you know, prep standpoint is lower than it used to be. That's fair. But, the difference between a really, really high-level college player and a pro is getting – that gap's getting shorter and shorter. And it really can benefit – an organization, if you got a guy like Goody who can identify that and bring in the right players, and it's fantastic. I mean, that's why the Packers always have success.
Yeah, he's done a great job in this offseason, especially on defense, is another great example of that. You mentioned the pass rush, the pressure up front, trying some new things, the spin moves, everything like that. In your opinion, was this just playing Seattle's offensive line? Was this a little bit of fool's gold, or did they discover something, and is this something that they can carry over into the remainder of the season?
I think there's two things. One, I felt really bad for the right guard of Seattle, because I think if you've ever played offensive line, you've been there where, like, every single play sucked. You know, it was just really – it was tough. You know, tough. Yeah. It's actually tough to watch, to be fair.
Surprised they didn't go to the third-round pick Christian Haynes at any point. I know he hasn't exactly, like, a strong start to the year either, but I thought they'd go to him at some point. They didn't. I think he had a handful of snaps, but not much.
Yeah, it's – They've struggled at various positions across the interior offensive line, and then obviously Abraham being hurt was a problem for a couple of weeks, and so it's just been a struggle up there. But listen, that's like, you got to show up and play. That's not the Packers' problem. I think if you're looking at Seattle, though, 90% of the pressure is coming from that area. And listen, if I have to drop back and pass set against guys who know that the quarterback holds the football, I mean, Geno holds the football. But now we're talking about this guy who gives, you know, again, I keep going back to like 61. I know that's not the real number, but it's something crazy like that. I mean, there's a confidence shift. You know, if you guys both enter in the game, like, we're both pretty confident in this game, and all of a sudden your starting quarterback goes out, right? And then you give up, and there's a couple – it just starts going like this. And the chasm between those – and I'm just telling you, the Green Bay Packers defensive line, they would still be playing that game if they had the option. Like, they would have never have left the field, because they know it's like, I can make a lot of money tonight. I mean, Jesus, Enagbare, what do you have, 3 sacks?
Yeah, I think 2 in a tackle for a loss, something like that.
Yeah, you know, the one you're just going, you're yelling at the screen, like, throw the ball. You know, I don't even care if he does or not. You know, it's wild. So those situations, I mean, listen, anytime you get to work on new stuff and it works, you build confidence. I think that's fantastic. And clearly, like, some of the stunts and everything that they're running, there's a reason that they've had success with some of this stuff historically anyways. Like, they haven't been able to beat guys one-on-one, so they've the pressures, the stunts, all that. It's been successful this year in creating some sort of pass rush. But if you can get Devontae Wyatt to get one, you know, he's good for one a game. You get Andy Barry, who's good for one a game. All of a sudden, you know, Carl Brooks had the double swipe rip that ended up with Rashawn Gary, who was being blocked, got knocked off and got his sack. Carl Brooks had the other one on Lincoln Tomlinson, who bull rushed him, and then ended up, I mean, so these guys are starting to win, and whether or not it's a function of, you know, the crowd noise was gone or blah 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 blah, it doesn't really matter, man. Like, that all that stuff builds confidence, and you feel better about yourself the next week. You know, it'll be interesting to see. They're going into a game, obviously we haven't hit it yet, but the Saints backup quarterback, blah blah blah. You know, there's a lot going on there as well. So maybe 2 weeks in a row.
Yeah, hopefully they can carry it over. And it's going to be such a key part of this team moving forward is if they can continue to get that pressure, if they want to make that big playoff run. You brought up the crowd noise a couple times. Obviously, the Packer fans showed up in a big way. You heard Go Pack Go chants early in this game. As a player, does that affect you on either side? If you're an away team and you have a bunch of home fans there, does that help you out? Does it just help in the fact that it's not as loud from a opposing side of things? If you're a player and your home crowd's not showing up and there's more fans from the, not more, but like enough fans from the other team that it's vocal, does that affect you? Like how, or is it just a non-factor? Like how do you view that?
I mean, okay. So if it's not as loud, I mean, Lumen Field is one of the loudest fields in this. I was shocked, quite frankly, that there's so many Packers fans, because that they as Packer fans travel well, but Seattle Seahawks fans are diehards. And so you were shocked to actually see that, quite frankly.
Agreed.
And you know, I've been on both sides of the ball there. You go down back in the day, you go down to San Diego, and you know, three quarters of the place is the Packers fans. And I always thought to myself, like, oh, this is, you know, the home field game for us. This is fantastic. And it's not loud, it's very easy to play in. And I've been in Carolina where, you know, second quarter, if we weren't winning the game, everybody would leave. And you kind of, you know, there's a part of you that goes, wait a second, you know, you don't care about it in the middle of the game, but you do. There is an acknowledgement of like, it would be nice for somebody to make this more difficult so Julius Peppers can get off and get a sack. You know, I mean, yeah. there's a little bit of like, we'd like a little bit of help here. But I think logistically, offensively, if you go to a place and it's not very loud, offensively, it really does help you because you don't have to worry about the silent count and all the, you know, all the advantages that they have there. If they're erased, you know, those teams bake that into their projections for sure. Like that, I can just tell you, like Seattle goes in going like, well, we're going to get two false starts from them. Like they're baking in those penalties. The expectation is you're going to get all that stuff. You're going to get an extra sack or an extra tackle for a loss. You're going to get all of that because of the crowd noise. And so if you don't have it, you know, it certainly kind of messes with the algorithm.
And I was stunned by it as well. It was awesome to see. Kudos to the Packer fans who showed up in Seattle. And anytime you hear those Go Pack Go chants early in the game, it's like, okay, it's a little bit different. I remember Steven Jackson for the Rams back in the day being so upset in St. Louis because it was all Packers fans there. I was in there at a game. I think it was the one he actually got upset at. I was in that game or at the game in St. Louis, and it was all Packer fans. And it definitely changes the tenor of the game. And Steven Jackson was not happy about it after that game. All right, bizarre tangent here. Forgive me for this. Not tangent, but like just a different thread. You brought up Julius Peppers. There's been something that's come up on the live chat on a couple of different occasions. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. Take Julius Peppers' time just with the Green Bay Packers. All right, so just his time with Green Bay. Who was the better pass rusher just in their time in Green Bay, Clay Matthews or Julius Peppers?
Who's the better pass rusher?
Or who, yeah, oh, well, you can
Clay
do player.
Matthews.
You can
Clay Matthews.
Okay.
Clay Matthews.
That's what I said too.
Yeah, I don't think it's even. I'm just trying to think if it's even close. Gosh, let me think about that. Let me put it to this way.
That Peppers is the better player overall, like just careers compared?
I don't think that's any question. Yeah.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah. So I would say it this way. I guess the better way to. There's two ways to answer that question. Clay had something about him. He had great moves. He had great counters, and he was strong. He was explosive. So he just had a lot of physical traits, and he had moves. Pep, I don't know even how to explain this. So Pep, when we used to work out in Carolina, there was 12-foot ceilings. Okay. We used to have to do a combine. And so you had to do broad jump, high, all of it, right?
Sure.
They had to remove the panels in the ceiling for the high jump with that 12-foot ceiling. So that's what you're dealing with. So when you say pass rush, like Pep didn't really have moves. And I'm not like trying to be – I mean, people probably tell you. He's like – it's like, how do you beat somebody? Well, I kind of run up to them, and then like whatever they do, I just do something that's not going to – I mean, it's going to make it bad for them.
Right.
Like, he didn't have – he doesn't practice moves. So – the frightening thing about Pep was you knew that, like, if you were off balance a little bit, like, it was probably over because he was such a better athlete than you. He's bigger. He's stronger. He's more. There's nothing you had on him, right? He's got body fat. I had body fat on him. That was it. I mean, everything else, you're kind of screwed. So it's actually maybe it's not as obvious as I might blurt it out, because I think of Clay and I think, oh, he's got that great spin, he's got the swipe, he's got the pull, he's got but then you're like, yeah, but he can't even touch Pep. He's got a 7-foot wingspan.
It's still amazing gorgeous. To me that some of these athletes, like he played like legitimately really good college basketball at North Carolina. Like he's one of the best pass rushers of all time. And he was like a D1 really good basketball player. And like what Travis Hunter is doing right now on both sides of the ball. It's still unfathomable to me that like Deion Sanders and Bo Jackson could play multiple pro sports at the same, like just some of the stuff that some of these guys can do is just unfathomable.
So I remember when I was my first year with Carolina, I thought, like for me, I thought Mike Rucker had a better year than Pep.
Sure. He was a good player, Rucker.
Yeah, he was a hell of a player. But I thought he had a better year. Quite frankly, I didn't think it was even debatable. But Pep went to the Pro Bowl and Mike got no love. And I didn't really get it until I got to the Pro Bowl. So I go to the Pro Bowl and I'm thinking, you know, this is so to kind of parallel it.
Yep.
Larry Allen is, you know, the best guard maybe in the history of the league. But at this point, Larry Allen isn't Larry Allen that I grew up with. He's old Larry Allen.
Right.
And Larry Allen was, you know, John Madden kissing his ass every week and, you know, us sitting in Green Bay going like, yeah, how many votes are you going to give Larry, you know, this whole thing. So I go to the Pro Bowl and I remember I lined up at like, you know, Larry plays left guard. And then so it was like Larry, Hutch and I and Hutch and I are like, we're going to play right guard because Larry, you know, it's Larry, you know, like whenever he's in, he's just going to play left. So I'm over at right guard and we're doing like walkthrough and Sean Rogers is there. And Sean's like, all right, Larry, take it easy now. Don't hurt me. And I went, and he wasn't joking. He was kind of joking, but he wasn't joking. I went, you know, you go, oh, I see what's happening here. I might think the other guy's better, but they're not afraid of the other guy. Like I thought I was playing better, but they're not afraid of me. Right. You know what I mean? Like they know I can beat them, but they're afraid he's going to end them. And that's the difference in, you know, you talk about these really good Bo Jackson, these really good athletes,
yep.
is that the opposing player, there's actual fear. Especially in football, there's actual fear that you're going to be physically harmed or something bad is going to happen to you as a result of facing this person. And that carries maybe more weight than, you know, some knucklehead like me would be able to quantify in the moment. But yeah, there's guys like that out there where people are, it was like Barry Sanders, man. Barry Sanders, would, I know we're getting off topic, but Barry Sanders would awesome. Literally go through, Barry Sanders would be so frightening to our defense. And that was his last year, was my first year, that our defense would be walking through the training room, just hyping each other up just to take a shot at tackling him. Just to not be afraid to take a shot. Hey, if you don't take your shot, I can't take my shot. Hey, just go for it, man. Don't be worried about it. Just go. You know, they were just begging each other to not be scared because he was so devastated. You knew you were going to look stupid. And so there's a very, very rare air of athletes, and Pep is one of them, that you're like, he could really make me look bad. You know,
yeah.
Like these other guys can beat me. I might end up on, you know, on the top of my helmet and, you know, the quarterback broke his legs, you know, it's a Reggie White thing. They might make it look bad. There's just, even in the National Football League, there's a level reserved for those four or five guys in the entire league that'll just scare the hell out of you.
While the holiday season is always an amazing time of year, it's also super easy to lose track of your finances and overdo the spending while buying gifts, hosting dinners, or dressing up for holiday parties. That's where Kickoff can help. I discovered Kickoff online while I was looking for ways to improve my credit and quickly found out how easy it was to sign up and how helpful it can be to improve your overall credit. If your credit is under 600, you could jump like 28 points in your first month. You heard that right, your first month. You can start building credit immediately for only $1 in your first month. And if you're still unconvinced, just know that Kickoff has over 100,000 positive reviews on the App Store and 98% of them are 5 stars. Worry less about your credit and enjoy the holidays more with Kickoff. For a limited time, get your first month free. Go to kickoff.com/packaday today. Hurry for a month of free Kickoff without the C. Get kickoff.com/packaday. Must sign up via getkickoff.com/packaday to activate the offer. Offer applies to new Kickoff customers first month only.
only. Subject to approval, average impact of 28-point increase is first month based on Equifax VantageScore 3.0 changes for kickoff customers with starting credit below 600 who made their first on-time payment between January 2021 and March 2024. Payment and credit card activity outside kickoff can have an impact on your credit. Terms and conditions may apply. Offer subject to change. Individual results may vary.
You never want to be the guy that is under Giannis getting dunked on. You like you don't want to end up on SportsCenter because you got, you know, pancaked or you got just completely embarrassed, right? So I can only imagine. It's crazy how much the mental side of that does play into it and what expectations are. And yeah, like both of them, Clay Matthews, Julius Peppers, both phenomenal players. But that's been an interesting one that's come up in the chat a couple of times. I said Clay was the better pass rusher just based on time in Green Bay, but it's a fun conversation nonetheless. And I'm glad we had it because that spawned off a bunch of other fun conversations. I kind of forgot about Mike Rucker, and he was a really good player too. So that's a fun one too. All right, before we get to Packers Saints, just really quick. You brought up Josh Myers. Curious your thoughts on his play. I think the two things that he usually does best, especially getting to the second level, when it's more of like a movement style game, his movement's really good. He can get to the second level, but getting to the second level, double teams. This game was better. What your thoughts on him this season? And as you look ahead, he's one of really, you know, not many potential free agents for this team that they're going to have to make a decision on. They do have some potential pieces that could play in that spot. They could rebuild it through the draft, free agency, et cetera. Thoughts on his season and what, you know, did they bring him back for 2025? I guess I'll put it that way.
Well, anytime you don't have to, you don't mention his name is probably a good thing in at the center position, unless you're a real dominant Charles Bentley kind of guy. I just thought he really, again, sometimes when you're watching film, for whatever reason, a guy catches your eye. And he caught my eye this week because I thought that his movement in space was excellent, and he sprung some blocks. I thought the double teams, for the most part, were excellent in critical parts of the game. He still is, the deficiencies are still there. I think he's gotten a lot better over the last 2 years, certainly.
Yep.
He's a lot better this year than he was last year. As to whether or not I would keep him, if I'm putting my GM hat on, I just think he's going to be able to make some money in free agency. And, you know, it's like, you know, the hard part about offensive line is, one, you don't know how good your offensive line really is in this scheme. You really don't know. I mean, we can always talk about what they're good at and this and that, and then you're not wrong. But like, I don't know if anybody in the league saying like, oh, the Green Bay Packers have one of the best offensive lines in the league. I can't imagine anybody saying that. But they're, you know, they have one of the better offenses. So it's like usually those two things go together.
Yeah.
You say that about Detroit, you say that about Philly, like, you know, there's teams out there that you're going to make that comment. You're just not going to make it here. Because they drafted Jordan Morgan, I don't imagine that Goody's going to allow Jordan Morgan not to start next year. I just don't see that happening. And so when I look at Sean Ryan, I think, Sean could probably play center. And they can move Jordan, you know, Jordan Morgan goes and plays right guard. And then they kind of have their unit. And they can have that for a number of years until the next, you know, whoever's going to be the next guy. Probably Jenkins has to get re-upped again. But I can't imagine Jenkins ever wants to leave here. I mean, why would you?
Yep.
I see Sean Ryan being a guy that could play the center position. I don't know how he is upstairs as far as being able to make calls and all that kind of stuff, but assuming that he can, you know, just the way that he moves anyways, you know, it'd be conducive to maybe playing that center spot. And then you can get Jordan Morgan in a right guard, and I think you have a pretty good, you know, assuming that he develops, you have a pretty good offensive line there, and you don't have to pay. I mean, I think we talked about this before, like the going rate for center, he's probably going to make over, you know, $10, $12 million, $13 million a year. And it's like, you know, without insulting anybody, you just go, I don't know if I would pay that kind of, I know it doesn't see, it's not a lot of money in this market, but it's just like, where else can we spend that money if we have Monk, you know, obviously the kid, yep. The ACC kid is going to be available to at least get a look at center. You certainly have the footwork for it. So I think my long-winded answer is I just can't imagine that they bring him back for anything more than a severe discount, because I think that they've started the process of replacing him 2 years ago. You know, I think it's already there. I think when they drafted Sean Ryan and then, you know, Morgan and then Monk, you just go like, well, one of those guys is going to be able to fill into that one position that we need on the offensive line. So
I think so too. I think it's going to be a very similar John Runyon Jr. situation where some team offers him more than 10 mil and they say, cool, thanks so much for all you've done. And we'll let some other team pay that big contract. And we'll just kind of churn through the offensive line like we always do and kind of continue that moving forward. So I'm kind of there too. It wouldn't stun me if he all of a sudden found his way back, but if I had to guess and kind of like you go ahead.
Well, see, even like when Mark and I left the same year, and that next year they went 4-12, quite frankly, like the guys that they got to replace us had a hard year. That was a difficult year for them for a number of reasons. But within 3 years, Adrian Clem had to. Yeah, it was tough. I mean, I met Adrian Clem in that offseason in Arizona, him and I are very friendly now. But that offseason, you know, we had a parking lot confrontation because he hated me so much because the media was shitting on him so much.
Right.
But my point was that within 2 or 3 years, they had Josh and TJ, and it's, you know, life goes on, right? So, like, life goes on with all this stuff. So, if you get rid of them, like, Matt LaFleur is going to figure a way to hide if they need to hide somebody, you know, and they probably don't, because I think any one of those three guys is going to do more than a good job of filling in at that position. So, you know, we always think that you lose one of those players and they start talking about continuity and this and that. That's good for a couple of weeks, but after that, you just keep playing ball.
Yeah, no, I'm totally there with you. And hopefully that transition goes a little bit better at the beginning than losing you and having to go in that direction for a couple of years. But like you said, ended up with Sitton and Lang, so it didn't take too long there. Really quick, Packers Saints, what are you looking for in this one?
I know Rizzi from Darren Rizzi from Miami. He's if there was going to be a special teams coordinator that becomes their next like NFL head coach, I think he would be it. Honestly, he's just got that personality, command guy. I'm sure he's running a tight ship and rallying those troops. I just think it's a very, you saw it in the Seattle game. It's just such a difficult job when your quarterback's hurt to have any expectation of winning a football game in the National Football League. And they've got some talent on both sides of the ball, certainly. But you look at this and you go, if the Packers show up, they're just astronomically better on paper for no other reason than Jordan Love is a really good quarterback and they don't have one on the side, and that I think it just becomes an issue. So you the expectations here certainly for me is that they continue their winning streak, and you know, this is one of those games that you probably earmarked early in the season that they were going to win. I don't know if the spread is coming out, but I have to imagine it's pretty high.
Do you have a guess? I know what it is. Do you have a guess?
Yeah, sure. It's so it's at Lambeau, and it's another night game, so it's probably 4.5.
It's significantly higher.
14.5. I don't know.
It started at 13.5. It's now at 14. 14 point favorites.
No way.
Yeah.
Is this college?
When I saw it, I thought maybe like when I, before I saw it, I thought maybe like 7-8 points for Green Bay. Like maybe it's because Saints have won 3 out of 4 prior.
Yeah. I'm trying to be conservative. Rizzi's going to have them ready to play. I promise.
Big time. Big time.
Yeah.
And they almost beat Washington last week, came down to the final play, 2-point conversion at the end to beat Washington, who's right now just a spot below Green Bay in the wild card standing or in the standings or whatever. So, I was pretty stunned by 14 points, but yeah, that's where it's at right now. So
I'll tell you what, man, that is a ballsy bet if you're going to take Green Bay in 14. I mean, I don't have that kind of juice to me.
I'm gonna put $0 on this. But Mike, for a beer next time you're in the Green Bay area, I'm gonna say Packers cover that spread. They win by more than 14 in this one.
Right. I tell you what, it's hard to argue with you if the Saints can't score a damn point. But we'll see.
It did surprise me. I do think the Saints are a little bit better than that. Maybe deserve a little bit more respect than that. Kamara maybe being out in this one maybe played a little bit of a factor too. We'll see. We'll see what the injury report brings this week. But as of right now, Packers by 14. Mike, you're the absolute best. Tell us about the YouTube channel and where we can find all your great work.
Yeah, just did a show on this game on our Process to Perform channel on YouTube, that Block Party podcast. Broke down a bunch of the tape. I think there's some interesting stuff there. We did something this week on on the, you know, why the backs offset differently. I think a lot of people asked me that question, so I tried to tackle it. It was an easy point and shoot there against the Seattle team. And then you can find me, Michael 16 on Twitter, Prospect Forum, and Instagram. Andy, thank you as always for having me on.
You're the absolute best. We'll talk to you soon. We might have an off week next week with the holidays, but we'll catch up sooner rather than later. Appreciate you a ton. That's going to do it for Mike and I today. Follow him at MikeWall68. You can find me at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Packaday Podcast. Until next time, and as always, go Pack, go.